coming up right now on the Midday 180.
Titans and Ravens face off on Wild Card Weekend. We have full coverage headlined by Greg Cosell at 10:15. Doug Matthews is on the show today, plus primary complaint. The Midday 180 starts now.
From 104.5 The Zone, this is the Midday 180.
Delivered by Edley's Barbecue.
With Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Out of the gates and glad you're with us. Look around. The crew all here. All rise. Gentlemen, good morning.
All rise. Like
David Reed, what are you wearing? What is this?
Opryland hat?
Stand up.
Stand up.
Stars and Stripes, but a new hoodie that I've not seen before.
God, does Simon want that?
Drink it in, boys. Drink it all in.
Does it come in youth medium?
Probably. I'm just starting to break out all of my Christmas clothing.
What's on the back? Is it solid red on the back?
Reed looks like someone that's working at a fireworks stand after the show today.
Hey,
look at his hat.
USA, an early start on the 4th of July. Yeah.
USA won the World Juniors last night, so we're all celebrating.
And
today.
David Reed won the JV League in our fantasy football league and never mentioned it yesterday.
Very modest. They gave himself a pat on the back on Twitter very subtly later yesterday.
So Reed, does this mean you're in the league?
I told you guys what would happen.
Reed's in the league.
Reminds us what happened when I won JV League.
It's a promotion.
That whichever the three of you finish last needs to be demoted to the JV League.
I'm in favor of that if it was Chad.
Relegation.
Yes.
I don't know. Chad had a comeback towards middle of the season.
Out of the three of us, I'm pretty sure I finished last of the three.
See ya!
I did not finish last in the league, though. Relegation. I just watched Ted Lasso, which relegation is a big theme.
How good
show.
Is it?
It's very good.
Are you like me? Like, did you imagine it would be hard for it to be as good as everybody's saying?
Yes.
And it's really good?
I went in thinking every single sports media member loves this show, and they can't stop talking about it. So I go into it. My mind immediately turns to, I'm going to try to poke holes in this thing and see where it's not as good as
but
they
it's
say.
As good as advertised.
It's really, really good.
Yeah, I think of it like one of those Saturday Night Live it's skits as good that as people they try to make into a movie, wow. Like the guys bobbing their heads in the car and at the club. How do you turn that
it's
into a movie?
It's good because it's so surprising.
All right.
It's got a good heart. It's just a feel-good story throughout. It's enjoyable to watch. All the side characters are great in England. It's shot in London. So the setting is really cool. It's very, very well done.
Is this your
the soccer
first
stuff,
use?
If you're a big soccer fan, the actual on-field soccer scenes are probably not great, but there's very
that
few of them.
Doesn't matter. Is this your first use of your Apple TV subscription?
That was the first show that we watched on Apple TV.
Hey, I brought the bell back to the studio.
And last night we
I
started
used it to wake up Simon.
We started the morning show last night, one episode in.
I really like it. A lot of critics poked holes into it for various reasons. I would recommend this. And I know you like to read as you go along. Watch it and then read the critical analysis of it and tell me how I did a podcast on this, like how I let that stuff change my feelings about something after I watch it. But I'd be interested in discussing it with you in that way.
So I just finished Cobra Kai season 3, which is also one of my favorite shows on TV on Netflix.
You're on fire right now.
And I mean, these are like 25-minute episodes. Ted Lasso the same way. You can get done with it in a day because it's going to take you 4 hours. Right, to finish a 10-episode season or however long, whatever. It's short. So Cobra Kai the same way. But talking about reading reviews and descriptions, there's a tie-in to this season of Cobra Kai that takes you back to Karate Kid Part 2, where they go to Okinawa. Very good film. A not-so-good film was Karate Kid Part 3.
I don't recall.
I love Karate Kid Part 2.
Get in there, Reed.
But there's a storyline where Daniel goes back to Okinawa and he sees Kamiko and Chosen again, and kind of reconnects with them and reconnects with that time. But there's also a Karate Kid 3 tie-in that's actually one of the most exciting developments of the season as
this
they go along.
Ridiculous.
And Karate Kid 3 is so bad.
You be you, and I'll be Dennis Leary.
I went back. And,
oh, you like Karate Kid 2, did you?
Oh, Karate Kid 2 is – Karate Kid 3
really?
Is bad.
Is that the one with the redheaded chick? Is that
no? That's Karate Kid 3. That's terrible.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking
about.
So
the redheaded chicken. So again, I went down a Karate Kid wormhole yesterday, and in the
dangerous.
No, listen to this. You're gonna love this storyline, Paul. The girl that played the redhead in Karate Kid 3, they didn't know she was 17.
Was she a replacement Elizabeth?
No. Let me finish, Paul. This is my turn to talk. All right, this is a great story, and you're gonna like it. She is 17. They didn't know she was 17 when they cast her.
Papers.
Hutton's gonna love this story even more than you. Ralph Macchio was 27 playing an 18-year-old when they shot Karate Kid 3.
Somebody go to jail?
They had a script where she was doing love scenes with him, and it was a love interest, and they scrapped it. So they kept her in the movie as a platonic friend of Daniel, where he was into her, and then she said, oh, my boyfriend's in Columbus, Ohio. So then they became friends, and that's one of the things that was panned about the whole thing. Why was she even there?
She was so sort of the whole good thing. Like,
what is her purpose?
She was so good an actress, they couldn't find an 18-year-old who was as good?
I think they signed her to a contract that they had to fulfill, that she was going to be in the movie, so they
Did
just had to have her
no
part.
Did she have no birth certificate?
I don't know how you could lie about your age and then still fulfill the contract.
She sounds like a very underhanded film.
They do it
project.
In the Little League World Series every year.
Yeah, wasn't there somewhere
that Daniel Monte was in
Daniel film. Monte of yeah. 1989 film.
He was the competing love interest, Hutton.
Yeah.
He was in Columbus.
Bubba Wallace's father famously took around a number of birth certificates. So whatever age he needed to be to race in whatever series, he would have that. Wasn't that the same girl that was in Teen Witch?
It was the redhead.
Yes. Because Teen Witch was one of those movies that was perpetually on HBO as a kid. And it's a bad, bad movie. I'm pretty sure it's.
Now, you guys know how I see things through to the end. I watched The Young Pope, for crying out loud, through the duration, which Hutton will never forgive me for. And I'm about to give up on the flight attendant. And Teresa said she would stick through it to see what happened. And I'm ready to bail to go to Your Honor.
Your Honor's good. I'm enjoying that.
Flight attendant's losing me.
Chad, is it weird that every time you mention Karate Kid, I think of Three Ninjas? the early 90s show.
Yes. Look,
or movie, it was a film.
Like the Karate Kid, the original, is like the Rocky original of the series. Like, right. It's the one that got real critical acclaim for being a surprise smash
hit. Academy Award level.
No, but I believe Mr. Miyagi, Pat Morita, was nominated for Best Supporting Actor.
I think so, too.
For the original Karate Kid.
And he should have been.
But Karate Kid Part 2 is enjoyable. The third one was just... They were basically trying to repeat the same thing in the third one. It was just very bad. But the only
was Miyagi
person
in it?
I'm going to give a quick spoiler alert. The only person who got critical acclaim for their role in Karate Kid 3 is probably coming back in season 4 of Cobra Kai. I'll let everyone figure out who that person is in the movie. It's not the redhead. Reed, you're wrong. It's not the redhead. She's not coming back in season 4.
How old is the redhead now?
50.
Let's look up this redhead.
She was 17 in 1988. So.
Well, spoiler alert, Liz Hsu is in season 3 for a 2-episode arc, and she's 57.
How's she doing?
She looks great for 57. My wife didn't think so.
Now, was the redhead
she
in
was
2
poking
or 3?
Holes in her looks, but I think she looks great for 57.
Was the redhead in 2 or 3?
She's in 3.
I'm going to be looking her up.
2 is all in Okinawa.
I want to see.
It's Robin Lively.
Robin Lively.
Robin
I just want to see what was going on with the age conflict.
Well, here's the funny thing about age. You know, you have Hutton. What's the show's Dawson's Creek, One Tree Hill? These are all 28-year-old playing high school kids,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So Ralph Macchio. Here's the
Friday
funny
Night
thing
Lights
about the time.
Is another one.
Well, even as Robin a kid, Lively.
Even as a kid, I did not understand.
She's Blake Lively's sister.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Must be older sister.
She's 40. She's 48.
Yeah.
She's aged well.
Blake Lively could be her daughter. So. The time, even as a kid, I didn't understand this. The original Karate Kid was in 1984.
She was on Twin Peaks.
Karate Kid 3 was in 1989. In Karate Kid 3, Daniel is defending his under-18 All-Valley Karate Championship. 5 years after the original, they play it as if it's a year later.
The time-space continuum.
It's in the next year.
The time-space continuum in some of these films outside of Back to the Future is not relevant.
But think of a man who's 22 in the original Karate Kid playing a 16-year-old. And then 5 years later, at 27, he can still play a 17-year-old.
Listen, you know who handled these age conflicts the best? Howard Stern. When he played young Howard Stern, he did a voiceover and he said, listen, I know I don't look 18 here. You suspend your disbelief. It's a movie.
Yeah. They should have done that at the beginning of the Karate Kid 3. We understand that, but he looks 18. That's the difference. He actually looks like a 17-year-old.
Wow. Well, there's your Karate Kid film for this year.
And scene.
Coming up, we'll talk Titans and Ravens. Paul was asking right before the show, he goes, what's your feel for this game? We'll discuss that, and we get into more details of the game plan for the Titans and Ravens with Greg Cosell. That is in an hour. We can take your calls right now. Have we taken many calls this week so far?
Like 2 yesterday that I remember.
I'm feeling disconnected from our listeners because of the lack of calls we've taken.
615-737-1045, our number.
Unite us. Unite the clans.
737-1045.
We love to quote Braveheart. That's Prima Nocta. Uniting the clans, all of it.
We're now getting on the better films.
615-737-1045. One that actually got Academy Award consideration. 737-1045. Load up those phone lines.
Also, this has been on Twitter a little bit. I get a laugh out of it. So last year at this time, we were discussing if Vrabel was really going to cut off his junk if they won the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah.
This year, there is another big question involving a Titan. Midday 180, delivered by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone. So last year at this time, we were, you know, having some fun and laughing at the expense of others who thought Vrabel was serious whenever he joked about what he would do if they won the Super Bowl. But I'm half joking here. What will Isaiah Wilson do with a Super Bowl ring?
Not get
How
one.
Quickly does he pawn that? Oh, he's getting one.
No, he's not.
He's not?
No. They decide who gets a ring. You don't have to give a ring to somebody who's on a non-injury illness.
Oh, but they're supporting him, Paul.
They're not supporting him with a ring. I would put down high stakes.
Everybody in that organization would get one.
That Super Bowl ring will be pawned off within 3 years.
Isaiah Wilson needs to be cut. That's what needs to happen. He does not need to be a part of this organization.
I understand that side of it, but I think you've got to take the emotion out of it. It costs you nothing fiscally. Obviously, it's costing you. It's costing you in a lot of ways.
In fact, I would go after every penny that was guaranteed to him in a bonus.
Yeah. But on the other hand,
he's away getting help, and he's hanging out at strip clubs with stacks of cash and making it rain on a yacht with hookers.
Is it hard to go Like, you have to make an effort to go.
GTFO. At that point, get out of here, man.
Think of the effort.
Could have been strippers, could have been hookers. I don't know.
Here's the thing. Think of the effort it takes. Like, I don't know about you guys. It takes effort for me to go to the I need to get the banking app where you can take a picture of a check, right? I don't have that yet. So it takes an effort for me to go deposit a check, right? I might have a check in my car or my pocket, and it takes me 4 or 5 days before I take a route that goes past the bank to deposit the check. Isaiah Wilson is making the effort. Of all the things he does not make an effort to do, he's making an effort or sending somebody to make an effort to go to the bank to get massive stacks of $1 bills. This is an effort.
Well,
he's not making an effort to do a lot, but he's making an effort to get to a bank to get a massive stack of $1 bills.
It's over. His career as a Titan is over. I mean, the quicker they announce, the quicker
it's not even about the stacks of $1 bills, Paul. It is the effort that he's making to post these videos on his account and then delete them quickly thereafter. Yeah. He's doing all that on purpose. It's a mock of what the Titans have done for him. He's laughing in their face.
It is
time to cut him loose.
He's got to know that when he posts that, it's getting screenshotted. And it's making the rounds.
That's why he's doing it.
Yeah.
He's doing it to cause a stir.
Why is he doing it? Yeah, Chad, you're the show psychologist. You've put me on the couch and been effective at helping me. So analyze why Isaiah Wilson is flashing this on social media. Is it a further call for help? Is it a middle finger? What is it?
I'm not trained well enough to know if he's got some sort of substance issue.
Okay.
Here's what I think the problem is. I think he's really dumb. I mean, let's be completely blunt about it. I think there's two factors here. He's dumb and he's entitled. I think like an entitled little kid that gets their face rubbed in poo because they screwed up, and you get a puppy and you rub their face in poo and they get upset about it. He feels like he's having his face rubbed in poo by the Titans because they said, go get help and go get your life figured out. So this is in a weird – we look at it as, boy, the Titans paid you a lot of money and invested a first-round pick in you. You should be doing more to work to be a part of the team and fulfill those expectations they had for you. And I think he probably sees it as, man, the Titans aren't helping me at all. What's going on here? I'm a first-round pick. I'm the man. It's just dumb. It's just a dumb line of thinking.
It's a slap in the face.
Yeah, you can't properly communicate with the incredibly dumb.
I think Vrabel would be done with him. I think Vrabel has clearly been done with him. Will John Robinson be done with him this quickly, or will John Robinson say, let's endure him through camp and see what we have, and if we cut him, we cut him at the beginning of September.
The guy showed up fat. He was a slob.
I know everything.
Let him show up to camp and hold a practice dummy,
for Taylor Luan.
Yeah, he can run as the practice squad offensive lineman. Congrats. The guy needs to be kicked to the curb. That's what needs to happen to Isaiah Wilson.
What an utter disaster. When you think of the defensive revamp this team needs in the offseason, which is very thorough. I mean, there is a lot. There's a major reconstruct that needs to happen on defense this season. And they're going to have a first-round pick. Chad, you've harped on this. You know, a first-round pick that's a complete waste. And you didn't even waste it a spot that you needed, really.
I don't understand what John Robinson saw.
No, if this was a defensive player, a defensive player that washed out, at least you could say, well, it was another attempt like Vic Beasley and Jadeveon Clowney.
At least they made the effort.
Yes, at least it missed at the right spot.
You're drafting a guy as a development guy who could start midway through the season on offensive line where you haven't had big issues and you've got these glaring holes elsewhere.
You just ran for 2,000 yards without the guy.
And how does Isaiah Wilson fool you?
Let me tell you why this is so difficult for me to understand why he's not already cut. And maybe they're legally behind the scenes going after every penny, which I hope they do.
Which takes time.
I hope they do. But they took a lot of scrutiny for drafting Jeffrey Simmons the year prior. For his past. And Jeffrey Simmons has done nothing but earn every ounce of respect by the organization and the faith they put in him.
A-plus behavior.
A-plus. Stand-up guy.
He's become a leader.
Exactly.
2 years in, he's one of the top leaders.
So you're rewarded for Jeffrey Simmons by going out on a limb and drafting him. And meanwhile, you have this other guy who is the exact opposite.
With lazy in his Twitter handle.
It's written right there. Lazy. And he's put on a non-football illness list where the quote from the organization is, we're going to support him. He's going to get help. And before I can even come back from Houston to discuss what he's doing on a yacht, he posts another video that he quickly deleted, but it was screenshotted, of him inside of a club with strippers holding stacks of cash. So what's next?
I've never seen this list used.
This is an embarrassment.
I didn't know this list existed. I've never seen it used in 25 years. And people are mistakenly calling it NFI. NFI, you mistake for non-football injury, which is an off-season
list. It's not that. And on top of that, he had the longest case of COVID in the history of the United States.
1 month.
With how long he stayed on that list. I mean, they didn't want him around. It's clear they don't want him anywhere close to their locker room or their facility. I don't want him on the roster on any list.
Yeah, never mind COVID. This guy's a disease.
Yeah, what is it that Mike Vrabel loves to say? We'll treat you how you treat the team.
And how's he treated the team? As badly as
is imaginable. This is why he needs to be not on the team. The way he treats the team means he's not a part of the team and he needs to be off the team.
And again, when you flip this around and think of everything that's gone wrong for this team, I mean, we didn't mention it until just now. We're touting this 2,000-yard season. Tremendous, tremendous accomplishment with a third-string left tackle for a good share of the way. They drafted a first-round offensive lineman who was not involved in 2,000 yards for Derrick Henry. What a tribute to Derrick Henry. What a tribute to Dennis Kelly. What a tribute to Keith Carter and Mike Sullivan. What a tribute to everybody involved. I mean, how good are you when you don't need the guy that you drafted in the first round? Well, you could burn a first-round pick.
I don't think about how good they are. I think about how good they could be if they hit on just one or two of these guys that they've missed on.
Well, I wish they had.
I can't help but think about that defense.
I wish they'd used it for something else. We all do, right? Oh, but for something that could have been impactful on the defense. Or if you were redshirting it for a year even, but for somebody to look forward to on defense next year. You know, if you were waiting on somebody that had torn an ACL like Jeffrey Simmons or something like that. But it's going to be I tweeted when this stuff came out, it's just impossible to imagine a return on the investment. Impossible. And they're laughing stock for it. I've talked to people around the league. The Titans are too patient with the first-round picks as it is. Jeffrey Simmons notwithstanding. We knew he had the torn ACL, and that's why he was available and all of that. But they don't go into the thing saying our first-round pick's a starter on opening day. And that should be the expectation. Why is that not the expectation? Why do you not say this guy's going to come in and do things for us from the very beginning? I don't really understand.
Oh, now the question is, the guy's just going to stay off social media?
No.
I mean, he can do whatever he wants, but at some point you have to say, is he willing to put in the work that we're willing to offer him to make his way back here? And you make a business decision.
But he can't go about doing whatever he wants.
You want him cut. Do you expect him cut?
If you're going to accept.
Yes.
If you're going to accept a paycheck as a first round pick, you give people, up the right to do whatever you
absolutely.
Want.
We were clamoring for Vic Beasley is gone. And he was a lazy slob. Same way.
Well, slob's the wrong word because he wasn't fat, but I get your point. Yeah, he's a do nothing. He's a do nothing.
Yeah, he showed up and took his $9 million and stood around.
The opposite of a tryhard.
Gave 500 of it back. That's how much he cared.
Yeah, he showed up late. I should put that in there.
I don't want to create no stories.
But
boss.
I mean, they
told me
they made an investment in him and quickly kicked him to the curb because it wasn't working out.
Yeah, they don't. And again, on the Isaiah Wilson thing, I mean, you look at it as a miss from so many levels. How do you miss so badly on your mantra? Love ball. Love ball. Number one criteria. Number one on the list, love ball. How do you get fooled by that guy? Where's any indication that he loves ball? Where's any?
All the draft reports on him talked about immaturity. It maybe was because of his age also, but needs time to mature. That was the knock on him when he came
but
in.
But still, if you see the immaturity, if you're the Titans, you have to see kernels underneath the immaturity of love ball. Oh, this guy's immature, but he loves ball, right? Have we seen a single indication of him loving ball?
You can deal with immaturity if they're helping you. I mean, this guy, they don't even want him around. Nowhere close. Not even to Nashville. Get out of the state. That's what they're telling him.
Take Vic Beasley's truck that he brought from Atlanta. Get in it.
We support you getting help. Don't do it here.
Yeah. We know some good
don't even come in for the COVID tests
and trainers out of state.
I really believe the Titans were thrilled when they saw that video. It's further evidence that they're going to get their money back. They got no interest in keeping that guy around.
I was telling you guys,
if you're that invested in a player, then you see to it that he's getting help. They are allowed to do that, but they just cut him loose and said he's going to go work on some personal stuff because they didn't want him in the building. That's why they cut him loose.
I think the recoup of the look. I've been reading this CBA.
They don't even want to mention the man's name. I mean,
the salary cap recoup, the signing bonus recoup, is difficult, because, well, the language of the forfeiture language in the CBA is very, very complicated. But
they have suspended him for conduct detrimental.
Right. So that helps them potentially recoup. And they recouped 1/17 of his salary this year. But, I mean, his base salary this year is only $610,000. His cap number this year is $2 million. His contract value is 11.6, okay? So if they end up swallowing up, that's guaranteed. Rookie contract, first round guaranteed. So, you know, imagine they're swallowing that on top of Vic Beasley's 9.5. At least it's not, if they swallow it, it'd be prorated into conceivably two years. But, you know, this is a team that's not carried a lot of dead money that would be carrying, you know, increasing dead money again now with a potential cap problem next year, depending on what the cap is. Even if the cap's better than we think, we're talking about 175 or 195. Either way, it's lower than it would be in a regular year where it increases and you can handle, financially at least, a big mistake.
Yeah, but an extra $20 million on the cap is big for this team.
Oh, sure.
It's not as low as what we're thinking.
Yeah. And I'm trying to find his.
And that 17th game is going to help the cap.
Yes, the 17th game would help the cap in a big way. His total bonus was nearly $6 million. So if you're talking about recoup, you're not, you know, you're talking about recouping probably a percentage of the $6 million. They're still going to take a bath on the guy.
It's go ahead and take it. Cut your losses and move on.
Now think, you know, John Robinson's brought in some good people, but he will have busted on Isaiah Wilson. He will have busted on Kevin Dodd. Now, Kevin Dodd year they had.
Kevin Dodd at least showed up and played.
Right.
He didn't fall down at the touch of someone else's hand on them on a field goal attempt.
Who is John Robinson's best first round pick? Jack Conklin, who's not with the team anymore?
Corey Davis, based on this year, I mean, it's a debate.
I have a hard Jack time Conklin saying first year. A fifth overall pick at wide receiver, first receiver taken. That's a really good number two. Is a good pick.
No, I agree. It's a big debate. Jack Conklin was all pro as a rookie.
He's been terrible in the first round. What's the debate?
I'm saying it's a debate who the best one is.
He's been saved by a second and third round.
Yeah,
and a trade for Tannehill.
And he's found some gems later, at Jayon Brown and Kevin Byard in the third up until this year.
But I don't know why we're surprised that a first-round pick isn't working out the way a first-round pick should under John Robinson.
Well, we're surprised that the guy hasn't played.
Well, we're surprised it's the worst pick in the history of the Titans.
Well,
maybe the worst pick in the history of the league.
I mean, at least
he's not worse than Pac-Man Jones because no one's rolling around in a wheelchair right now.
No, from a personal standpoint, absolutely
Pac-Man
not.
Jones scored
but Pac-Man Jones is productive.
He was productive, but
He's a disaster, but a different kind of
disaster. He was a one-man crime wave.
He was a criminal.
Yeah. He brought a crime wave to Nashville when they drafted him and Vegas.
Hey, I credit Isaiah Wilson. He hasn't threatened to kill me. He's got that going for
him. He's not a big spitter.
Not a big spitter.
Well, the Isaiah Wilson just goes against everything the organization stands for. That's just point blank. How I view it, and you know, it's seeing some of these videos. He clearly doesn't get it, and I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. None of us do with the communication there, but I wouldn't want him connected to the team at all, because if this is what's going on, where are we headed with it?
Well, if someone, by the way, brings up Jeffrey Simmons is the best first round pick for John Robinson.
Listen,
maybe so.
I love Jeffrey Simmons. I think people have really latched onto him because they like the fire.
Big Jeff.
They like the demeanor and they like the nickname.
Big Jeff.
And look, I think he'll be a much better player when he has, God willing, they're able to put some people around him. And he is a hell of a run player. Jeffrey Simmons has not been nearly impactful enough against the pass. So, again, he's a first-round pick who's had some success, but is not the fully rounded player, the same way you're talking about Corey Davis, the same way even we talk about Jack Conklin, who's all pro as a rookie, but ultimately, you know, had some limitation.
615-737-1045, our number. We go to the phones. We go to Tommy. Tommy, thanks for waiting. Go right ahead.
Hey. So, I've been listening to y'all the last couple days. Fortunately, I do work a lot with Titans and with all their field renovations. But as much as y'all are going to hate this, I'm a diehard Ravens fan, but I am very skeptical about this game because Lamar's proven himself in the regular season as a great quarterback, but playoffs, man, it's gotten to him in the head, and y'all, Vrabel has come up with incredible game plans to stop him. And I'm really scared to see what this game's going to turn out like.
Well, it's no secret that they have a method to get
it's at, make him pass
at the Ravens, make him throw outside the numbers. I asked Hutton earlier his feeling on it. He said if Lamar can throw, the Ravens are in pretty good shape.
If he has an accurate day, the Ravens will win.
I'm in agreement. If the Ravens can figure out what the Titans have done to them twice in a row, then the Ravens are in good shape. And if they can't, then the Titans are in good shape. I don't think there's a lot of tweaking that's going to happen in terms of what the Titans try to make the Ravens do in order to beat them. So can the Ravens solve it or not? I'm not a big Lamar Jackson guy. So I don't think Lamar Jackson can do the things against the Titans that he's required to do. Now, here's my problem. I think that the Ravens are going to be better on defense than they've been. Calais Campbell's back in this game. Brandon Williams back in this game. Those are difficult pieces to deal with in a way that the Titans didn't have to deal with in the first game this year, which was a very close game. That's, to me, the difference here, potentially.
Tommy, thanks for the call. We have time for others. 615-737-1045, our number. More of your phone calls coming up, talking Titans and Ravens. We'll get into the Henry effect of this game, red zone efficiency of this Titans team, things you can count on, offensive efficiency in general. Midday 180, delivered by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone. Greg Cosell joins us today at 10:15. Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue. They deliver to you starting at 11 a.m. Edley'sBBQ.com, 12 Southeast Nashville, Sylvan Park are the locations. You can also check out Poncho and Lefty's in Sylvan Park, right across the street from Edley's Barbecue. Chandler, lead us off this segment. Welcome. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys.
What's up, man?
So basically, I had a question. You know, obviously, our offense is more fun to watch than it has been in a long time. And we're going to need that offense to keep up with people like the Chiefs and the Ravens. Where does that leave us with Corey Davis? I have a feeling he's going to be wanting a lot of money. And I just feel like he's kind of underperformed up until this year. And, you know, we could go in the draft and maybe get somebody like Elijah Moore from Ole Miss. And basically have him play the slot once Humphrey's contract expires and then maybe move AJ to the outside. What do you guys think? Is Corey Davis worth signing again or not?
I mean, I think you make a play, but I think he's getting more money somewhere else. There are going to be teams like Philadelphia and the Jets that may value him as more than what he is, which is, you know, a solid two. But you know, we've discussed this. He's good at what Arthur Smith asks him to do, which he's kind of reduced the envelope. And somebody's going to see him in that reduced envelope and look at that and go, oh, man, look what he can do there. We can take that and do more. And not consider that the Titans had gone from asking him to do more and reduced it into a place where he can do what he's been doing. Also, you know, he's capable of a game like he just had where he dropped three balls and was disappointing. So overall, his body of work, you know, he's certainly not played like the fifth overall receiver. The guy's going to have a 12-year career, and he's a good player. But I can't see paying him $10, $12 million, which is what somebody's going to give him. And I've been a proponent, Hutt, of you have to sacrifice something from your good offense in the name of something for your terrible defense. And to me, that's probably Corey Davis. If you could trade Corey Davis for pass rush help, I'm doing that.
Is it that simple, though? Is it as simple as...
Well, financially, I'm
Well,
saying.
For allocation purposes, is it as simple as doing that? Or
I think something's got to come off the books somewhere. Also, Adam
Humphries...
Well,
he's guaranteed to be off the books.
Right. But putting him back on the books.
Coming out the books would be Malcolm Butler.
Right. But I'm saying if you put him back on the books, that's money that you could be spending elsewhere. Adam Humphries, I think, too, could come off the books. You're swallowing, I think, $5 million to save $4.75 million or vice versa. So that's one of the reasons I'm disappointed they didn't get a wide receiver in last year's great wide receiver draft. And they're going to need a wide receiver out of another good wide receiver draft coming up. And he's going to need to develop and contribute right away. And he's going to be a guy that's willing to block also. And I know Corey Davis is a great blocker, but they're allowed to draft a guy who can be a great blocker and receiver also. And there are a lot of good receivers in college.
I think that now every year is going to be a good receiver draft.
Yes, I agree.
It's a product of college football. Receiver. I mean, you just got a ton of guys that are catching a ton of passes in college football.
Seven on seven in high school and you know.
And they're all over the place.
I agree.
It's just that I think that's always going to be a fertile ground in the draft.
But Corey Davis certainly has graduated into the best version of Corey Davis we've seen.
I mean, he's been really good. He ranks 32nd in receiving yards, and that includes 2019 before the quarterback change.
And he missed two games.
Well, since the quarterback change, he's over 1,300 yards in 22 games. That's 60 yards per game.
Very nice.
And
very important contributor.
This year, he's contributing in the end zone as well. Now, he's had some costly drops for him. Luckily, they didn't bite the Titans this past week. That would have put him over 1,000. Yeah. But if he doesn't miss the two games due to COVID this year, he's over 1,000 yards. And if you look at his stats since the return from COVID, going into the Green Bay game, he was 5th in the NFL in total yards and lead. He was the leading pass catcher in yards per catch with a minimum of 30 catches. Ahead of Hill and Kelsey and Adams and Diggs, if you look at those numbers since he came off the COVID list. Now, this was going into Green Bay. But that's the production you want. And you have to ask yourself, is the rapport that we're seeing with the quarterback who is in command and the two wide receivers in Davis and Brown paired with a Pro Football Hall of Fame candidate in his prime, are you willing to part ways with Corey Davis? You have to, I mean.
Very clear question. Important question.
And you also, I mean, what you have to ask too, okay, if Arthur Smith's not here, how does that impact the right? I mean, all of those things factor into what they're doing offensively. And then we also have to discuss how they have changed their way of thinking. It's the same, you know, going to a college example, it's the same line of thinking that Nick Saban has had. Now, Nick Saban's defense is still playing well at times. They've done some really good things this season. I also saw what Ole Miss did to them. And Alabama still outscored Ole Miss because of the mindset change. The mindset change was we're going to put up 35 to 40 points a game. And that's what the Titans' mindset is.
But wouldn't you think that the Titans have to put a cap on their value for Corey Davis? And inevitably in free agency, if it gets there, and most guys get there.
Yeah.
Somebody else has a higher value. Somebody else is prioritizing it in a different way. Somebody else doesn't have A.J. Brown and Jonnu Smith and Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill, right? And so they're thinking of it in a different way. They're coming to it with a different cap situation. They weren't in the AFC Championship game last year. They're not scoring 30 points a game.
He's 6th all-time in receivers for the franchise since the team moved to town.
And I think he's a terrific guy, too. He's a terrific locker room guy.
Fundamental question, though, about Corey Davis to me. When you look at the building blocks of this team and sustaining it, the division champ this year, sustaining it next year, is Corey Davis in your future plans a luxury or a foundation to what they're doing?
I think it's an excellent question. I mean, right on the line.
Can you draft a second, third-round receiver that can come in and take up maybe not all of the slack of losing the Corey Davis of this season, but a lot of it?
I think you can.
That's how I weigh every decision is. Could a mid-round draft pick come in cheap and do a lot of that?
Second, third isn't mid-round. So
right.
Say third, fourth. Can you? Yes. But also, you need an inside linebacker in that spot, probably. You might need a tight end in that spot, probably. You've got to put the puzzle together with all these other needs. And so what's more likely? And I would lean to what you said. I don't know, Hutton, where you stand on this. Wide receiver is a spot where there are a lot of people. Are there a lot of tight ends like Jonnu Smith in the third and fourth round coming out of college? I would say not as many.
There's becoming a lot more, though.
Yeah? I would say my feeling is harder to find. Are there as many inside linebackers? I would say you could find inside linebackers. The Titans have proven you could find inside linebackers. They went Avery Smith. They went Jayon Brown. They went David Long, who I'm not completely sold on. They overspent on Rashawn Evans, right? I think you got to measure all of these things. Where can you get another Corey Davis type? Is it easier to find than some of these other positions or harder? This is the complicated equation that the Titans are going to have to sort out. And we're also kind of suggesting that the Titans have the capacity to re-sign him before he gets to free agency? We have no idea if they do. Right?
See, I'm not viewing it as a long-term thing. When I say, do you want Corey Davis back? I'm trying to take advantage of Derrick Henry in his prime.
Yeah.
Paired with a contract that Ryan Tannehill has, which is a great luxury for the team right now. Maximize that. Go win a Super Bowl right now.
Okay.
How do you do that? Well, you do that with a rookie? Or do you do that with Corey Davis in the fifth year?
Well, we can. This is a great conversation. We could keep going. Could you do it with a pass rusher?
We've been talking about that for years.
I know.
They have to get a pass rusher if Corey Davis is here or not. They must find a pass rush.
Right, but I'm saying if the defense, like we're talking about, gets to 15th, Derrick Henry's getting the ball back more. The offense is getting the ball back more in some better field position. There's actually a turnover once in a while at the 30, and Derrick Henry needs two carries to get into the end zone instead of five. But, you know, all of these puzzle pieces. So a better defense is also going to help maximize Derrick Henry. So there's Corey Davis' potential trade-off there, too. What's the best way to maximize Derrick Henry? There are several paths to that.
Let's just use Baltimore as the example as we wrap up the hour. Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Peters in man coverage. You taking Corey Davis or a rookie this week? Because I know what happened in week 11. Corey Davis and A.J. Brown combined for 9 catches, 175 yards in that game.
Sure. But let's take Baltimore at full strength. Calais Campbell, Yannick Ngakoue.
I'm giving you Baltimore's secondary full strength. At the time, they had combined for 4 interceptions, 7 forced fumbles, 2 all-pro, Pro Bowl caliber corners, and man coverage on the outside. Go win the battle.
Yeah, and they did. They did very well. But, and I think you're making a great point, but they were missing Calais Campbell and Brandon Williams
sure.
up front, which made it a little tougher on the secondary because they had to hold up longer.
Sure.
So this week we'll get a better, stronger apples-to-apples comparison, which is a fascinating matchup again. Also, those guys are going to be pissed off that secondary.
Absolutely.
And they're going to bring it. So it's a great, great matchup, and we can have this conversation again and into the offseason. I love Corey Davis. I think he's done a great job. You know, he's never going to live up to fifth overall because he's not that guy. But he's done a good job. You love guys in contract years, you know, when yeah. things grow. And that's the other question, you know. He's practiced and he stayed healthy this year in a way he hasn't before. So you look at the body of work and do you say, this is Corey Davis? Or is the body of work Corey Davis? And is he going to have nagging injuries crop up again and miss some practices and the same thing? Do you judge the 4 years or do you judge the 1 year? And that's a complicated thing where you choose what to put the weight on.
So his rookie season of the 4 years, he was hurt and he had 375 yards, didn't even score a touchdown until the playoffs.
Right? He had an ankle coming in.
Yeah, so I mean, he had 375 yards receiving that year.
Yeah,
and since then, he's averaged 1,000 yards since then if you compare the 4 years and the yardage he's put up.
He's been good. And Mariota held him back. Let's be honest.
That too.
He held everybody back.
Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.